Hi, everybody. This is Trevor Locke, and I'm joined today by World and Olympic coach Audrey Wissiger. Hi, Audrey. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Trevor. Thanks for having me.
Now, of course, Audrey, you don't really need any introduction to our listeners, but I'm going to give one anyway. Audrey is a two-time Olympic team coach in 1998 and 2002. She was the PSA and USFSA Coach of the Year in 1999, and that's the highest honor available for coaches. She has a PSA World Coach ranking, and she's master rated in figures and freestyle. She gave the keynote address at the PSA World Conference in 2000 and again in 2003. She's held positions on the board of directors of the PSA as well as various U.S. Olympic Committee and USFSA committees. In 2003, she founded Grassroots to Champions, a training company for coaches. Audrey teaches at the Fairfax Ice Arena in Virginia, where she's coached since 1973. Most of you know her as Michael Weiss's coach, but she's also worked with Timothy Gable, Lisa Kwan, and Christine Lee. And she's currently coaching senior men's competitor Tommy Steenberg. Audrey, did I leave anybody out?
I'm also now coaching Parker Pennington, who has recently relocated to Fairfax, Virginia, last spring.
Wonderful. And at the time of this interview, it is just after a sectional competition, and your skaters did quite well, didn't they?
Yes, I was very happy. Tommy took gold, and Parker went silver, and they both skated very well.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Well, I thought we'd start out today by talking just a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up, and how old were you when you started skating?
I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, not exactly a hotbed of ice skating. And my father grew up in Europe and took us skating when we were children. So I was really on the ice every Christmas as a family tradition from the time I could walk. But I was on those horrible double runners and wasn't really very skilled until I started taking lessons at age 8. And
okay.
It was a studio rink. Really didn't have a lot of formal training, so it's kind of self-taught.
So how long did you skate while you were being self-taught?
Well, then I got with a really great gentleman. His name was Jerry Renault. He has passed away, but he taught me gave me the passion for skating, and he was a gifted choreographer who he really didn't have a very high technical background. He was with Icecapades for a while, and that was the bulk of my training until I moved to the Broadmoor World Arena, and I worked with Ron Baker in my last 3 years of my skating, which was in the 70s, early 70s. I graduated from high school and went on to George Washington University, where I started teaching basically just for fun money. I never thought I'd be a career coach.
Uh-huh. So what was it that attracted you to skating in the first place?
I think I've always loved the freedom and the creativity. I loved the movement. I was probably a hyperactive child. I danced. I studied for years with the Washington School of Ballet, and skating was just a little bit less rigid than some of those ballet classes, so it allowed me to have more self-expression.
Uh-huh. Did you still feel the same way when you put your skates on, you're out on the ice?
Oh, absolutely. We laugh because there's a here, and we're all, how should we say, mature, and
uh-huh.
We still get out there and play around on the ice, and the kids are sometimes looking at us going, oh my gosh, I can't believe our coaches are acting like that, but it's it never changes. That love for the glide never changes.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a little bit that you trained at the Broadmoor World Arena. When you went out to train there, did you find that you had to relearn a lot of things? Did you find that you had to relearn technique and change bad habits?
I probably did. I might have been too far gone, unfortunately, so it's probably been one of my missions to make sure that skaters that start and have a modicum of ability get good information, and that their coaches start the foundation of learning with the really solid basics. Not to say that my coach, Jerry Renault, didn't teach me good foundation, but he really wasn't probably as trained himself. I mean, he only got through intermediate as a skater himself. So I had to it was a whole different scenario. The rink that I skated on when I was a child was a studio rink, which was about a third the size of a traditional ice rink. And when I went to competition, I was kind of like that girl in Ice Castles, where I'm looking around going, oh, my gosh, look at the size of this building.
So you're actually a two-time U.S. National medalist.
Yes, I was third in novice ladies, and then the next year I was third in junior ladies. I can honestly say that year in junior ladies was a turning point for me. I was only 14 years old and got a prolonged standing ovation after my free program. And it was one of those remarkable moments. Every skater hopefully has one of those where you understand the power that, you know, one performance can have over a crowd. And, you know, I was just out there doing my thing, and all of a sudden I realized people were on their feet, wildly clapping for me. And it was a little intimidating, I think, you know, when you're not prepared for that kind of response. But the program was choreographed by Jerry, and it was to the music Madame Butterfly, and some of the old school coaches still will refer to that as being a, you know, highlight for them to see somebody perform like that. I think it was kind of revolutionary in the way it was choreographed. You know, hopefully if somebody saw it, they would remember that as a good moment.
Uh-huh. Did you skate professionally?
I did one professional performance with the now defunct World Professional Championships that was organized by Dick Button. And I was a stand-in for Ty Babylonia in the group number. I was partnered with Robin Cousins, of all people. And it was really, really motivating for me. I had a great time. I was on the team with Linda Fradiani, Charlie Tickner, Randy Gardner, Robin Cousins, Val and Sandra Bezek. And I was the only skater in that number that hadn't gone to the world level myself. But it was really a thrill to perform in front of 20,000 people with that group.
Yeah,
that, that was it.
Uh-huh. So why didn't you pursue any more with that?
I wanted to go to college. I was not going to be an ice skating. I mean, I really didn't see that I had a career available to me. I guess I could have done the tours, but you know what, Trevor, I'm afraid of flying. So at that time, I didn't think I could do it. I really didn't think I could make myself tour.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. So how did you get into coaching?
I went to GW here in Washington, D.C., was going into broadcast communications with a minor in journalism, and I wanted to be in the TV industry. And my now husband's mother-in-law was looking for coaches in Fairfax, Virginia, and I applied. I was only 17 years old. There were a few other coaches that worked here, and it was really part-time. It was meant to, you know, allow me to buy books and beer, and I wasn't going to be a career coach.
Sure.
But I loved it. I didn't realize the lasting imprint, the lasting tracing on my soul that skating had given me. And I began to get so much pleasure out of passing that on to other skaters. So my parents were kind of like, when are you going to get a real job? But this was something I couldn't ignore. I mean, I actually had an internship with National Public Radio, and you know, I really had a lot of other job opportunities, but I just kept getting drawn back to the skating.
Mm-hmm. So from those early days, you've obviously become one of the most successful coaches in the world. You're a two-time Olympic coach. But I suspect your day-to-day coaching isn't perhaps quite as glamorous as many people suspect. Would you share with us what a typical day is like for you?
Sure. Well, and it's very different now than it was when I was, you know, in my early 20s. And when I taught in the beginning, I taught everybody and everything, and I taught 7 days a week. And remember, I was in college at that point, so I was trying to fit in teaching ice skating with going to class full time. I would live in my car, basically. You know how you study and you eat and you...
Yes.
Do everything in your car. And so in the beginning, I had the opportunity to teach all levels, but I did get a chance to start doing choreography because I think that is probably one of my greatest strengths, is the artistic development. And it dawned on me after working with some skaters that I needed to start becoming a technical coach, because a lot of the kids that I was working with to do their programs couldn't do the things I wanted them to do as skaters. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have to teach them how to skate. And it turned into a lifelong career of raising skaters out of group lessons. I can't tell you the number of skaters that I've taken from tots and taken them through, you know, high-level competition. And I think I'm so lucky that I've had kids that were willing to stay with me, you know, through that duration. I taught Michael Weiss for over 18 years. Currently have taught Tommy Steinberg for, I think, going on 8 years. Lisa Kwan, you know, she started in group lessons here. That, to me, is the best way of raising skaters. If you can put your handiwork in early on. And I've taught adult skaters. I think sometimes I'm not as patient, perhaps, as I need to be with adults. And I've had to learn to develop that particular aspect. And one thing I did was I took golf lessons so that I would become the adult student myself, and I began to realize, oh, this is a lot harder for adults than I realized. I really teach a lot of basic skating. I love teaching little kids. I'm now mentoring some of the young coaches here at Fairfax, where they are the head coach, and I come in as, I love it, I'm the grandma coach, and I get to work with some of their little ones. You know, I just teaching a single loop yesterday.
Nice.
And I feel that every coach that is working with any level skater is creating a basic foundation for that person, regardless of their actual talent and ability, because that particular skater may not be physically able to produce something, but they may be a great coach. And so you're teaching, you know, like the roots of the trees that are growing. That's why I call my company Grassroots to Champions, because it's, you don't know how far your influence reaches when you're teaching skating. So, and it's not that I think skating is the be-all, end-all. I often have students that I'm most proud of that have gone on to become doctors, lawyers. I have one that's a politician. I have one that's a TV anchorwoman. And they constantly, you know, send me notes and saying how much the skating taught them about life. And I think that's something that we as coaches must remember, you know, that there's a purpose beyond just doing axles.
Sure. It is definitely one of our biggest roles. So you mentioned very briefly Grassroots to Champions. What is Grassroots to Champions?
I started Grassroots to Champions when I was kind of in a lull between elite level skaters. I mean, towards the end of my time with Michael, I was primarily just teaching him. And it's very, very stressful working at the highest end with elite skaters. So, you know, the young coaches that are aspiring to get to the top, once you get there, it's a lot of work. So after our relationship was over, I had some time to reflect on what did I want to do next with my coaching. And I thought I wanted to mentor coaches, because I wished, when I was a young developing coach, that somebody had given me, you know, just a little extra support rather than me having to figure it out all on my own. It's interesting because the seminars are basically designed, if you read our mission statement, for coaches and their skaters. And I would like to have more coaches partake of that. What typically happens is all the skaters show up and the coaches take the day off. And I think it would be more effective to have the coaches there with their students so that they can see a hands-on working situation. And I like that because a lot of coaching education situations are in theory, where the coaches are sitting in a classroom, or, you know, maybe they're all gathered out on the rink, but they aren't working hands-on with their particular skaters.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have a seminar, I invite local coaches to bring their kids with them, and we work together. And I always learn from a seminar. I don't mean to tell coaches, look, I know everything and, you know, you should learn from me. I think it's a learning experience for all. And, you know, I do have coaching wisdom to share, and I certainly am open-minded to hear what other coaches have to, you know, relay to me. And Grassroots to Champions has taken off. We did over 12 seminars last year nationwide. We've done some in Canada. And I'm seeing the results of the work that we've done with young coaches. Darren Hosier is one of my former pupils who's now an elite coach, and he coaches Chrissy Hughes, who is going to the Junior Grand Prix final. And basically 4 years ago, Chrissy could hardly do a double axel, and now here she is at the Junior Grand Prix final. And we also work with Emily Hughes. And it's nice because I feel, again, that the legacy of the work that I've done can now be passed on to other skating coaches.
Sure. Now, as part of Grassroots to Champions, I think as overall your training philosophy, you're a big proponent of drills. I think, in fact, one of your training models is more drills than spills. Can you explain how Grassroots to Champions training method is different than the training method used by most coaches?
Well, I feel that learning and creating muscle memory is really important. Even if the skater is not perhaps athletically prepared to do difficult skills, if you teach them the right muscle movements from the onset of their skating, then they'll be prepared when they do get a little bit older, a little stronger, and they are not also developing bad habits. And I also think that this more drills than spills, you know, we want to create a can-do, confident skater, not one that's used to just wiping up the ice. So, you know, I don't really believe in the try it again method. We use a formula in determining whether or not a skater is prepared to do a particular skill. Chris Conti and I have worked very closely on this. We call it the jump formula, and I'll just tell you what it is. It's the air time that a skater can attain times the rotation rate plus a correct axis, which is their air position, plus the desire component. And if you have a skater that has those first three components, then all you need to do is make sure that they know that they're capable and they really want to land that skill. But you have a lot of coaches telling kids to go out and, you know, just try your double axel. And they definitely are not getting enough air time, or they don't rotate properly. And the kids are out there killing themselves. And what are you doing? You're teaching these skaters that, ooh, this is hard and I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I prefer to use all the tools and all the training aids that I wish I had had when I was skating, because I think that we can make the learning process a lot safer. That's the other issue. You know, we're asking young skaters now to attempt difficult skills, and they haven't had the background in skating training that we had when we were skating, because we had figures, and figures sort of forced you to develop your skating skills as you were developing physically. And now you've got little pre-juveniles out there, and they think they're doing rockers and counters, and you know, they really don't understand edge and blade control. And the parents are looking at the kids, you know, and they think that their little Susie can do their double axel, and they have no idea what is required in order to be able to do a double axel. So I use the Dartfish software quite a bit, which is a computer system that, you know, shows you in greater detail exactly what the skater is doing. And I have a whole CD-ROM of muscle memory developing drills that starts the skater from the beginning learning what it feels like to do a correct single, a correct double, a correct triple, you know, through quad. And I want to tell all the young coaches out there that are thinking, well, I'm only working on single flip jumps with my skaters, that single flip could become an awesome triple flip if you teach them correctly. But if every stage along the way you have to redo everything, I hate that feeling that I have sometimes. I call myself the unteacher, mm-hmm. which is I get, you know, a skater that they're completely technically incorrect, or they have the wrong mental perceptions of what they're doing, and I'm going, oh, I have to change everything. That's so hard. So right. I'm imploring all the young coaches to do it right from the beginning, and then the career of their skater will be so much greater. I think if I can attribute one thing to my success, it's realizing the big picture and looking at a skater and going, okay, if Tommy was going to do a great triple flip, he needed to have a good single flip, you know. And I think maybe that's something that Grassroots to Champions can help young coaches with.
So, I mean, obviously, it sounds like you think that most coaches that don't work with the elite level skaters often overlook the importance of teaching their skaters precise technique early on. Do you feel that that's just maybe impatience on the part of the coach?
It's impatience, and sometimes it's pressure because, you know, it's a business and you're trying to keep your business afloat, and you want the parents of the kids. That's why it's really important to have video and technical knowledge. So you can show a parent in black and white numbers, look, Susie's not jumping high enough. These are the numbers that we've come up with for a viable, you know, double flip. And so that's why everything is cheated and downgraded in newest terminology. And I think, yes, I have a coach's manual that kind of gives a broad outline of the stages of development for an elite skater. And at one of my seminars, I played a montage that showed several of my skaters that I'd had long-term from the time they started. You know, so at age 9, this is what Michael Weiss looked like. This is what it looked like at 13, you know, 18, you know, 26. And I think when young coaches see that, they're like, oh, my gosh, he was kind of normal looking when he started. He wasn't a wunderkind. And, you know, it was just through very careful molding and shaping and chipping away and working that, you know, this three-time national champion emerged. I used a great analogy the other day with me. Chris Ponte said, you know what, Audrey, I think you're good at seeing the statue underneath the chunk of marble.
And, can you say that again?
Seeing the statue in the chunk of marble.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is where an elite coach perhaps has an eye, but a young coach sometimes will get started too fast and they'll chip away and all of a sudden, oops, made a boo-boo, which I've certainly done. I'm not here to tell you that I haven't made mistakes. But if I can encourage young coaches to take their time, get a big picture, make a battle plan for every skater of where you think they can end up with and fill it in. And also to realize that this is an up and down thing that we do in terms of development, you know, emotionally, physically, sometimes family situations can interfere. Just, you know, have faith and have a belief in your dreams, because every kid that you're working with, you are hopefully giving them good lessons regardless of the outcome of their skating career. And I think that's important to keep in mind. I do think that young coaches definitely need to learn how to plan for their skaters.
So as part of their training, do your skaters have written goals?
Yes. I'm not probably as organized as I've seen some other coaches where the kids come out with these gorgeous notebooks and, you know, like they have everything compartmentalized. I am more of a, this is what we're working on right now because this is what this is what you need to work on. And I give my kids homework every day. That is one thing I'm very demanding with my skaters, that these are the areas that they need to improve and this is how they're going to do it. And then when they've attained that, then we get on to the next thing. I like for them to give me their goals. Some of the older, more insightful skaters are very good at it. Some of the younger ones have absolutely no idea. So I think at a younger stage, having goals, because every kid that, you know, walks in here thinks you're going to be a superstar, you have to be realistic with them. And I would never tell a kid that dream is unrealistic. I would just say, okay, if you want to go to the Olympics, you have to be able to do this, 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 and this. So let's get started. And, you know, that's a tough one because I think a lot of parents, too, they're sometimes coming into this sort of strange world. They don't have any experience or background in it. Some of them have no experience in sports. And
sure.
It's very expensive, and we're expecting them to just pay the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So I often understand. I have a lot of meetings with my parents. I meet with them at least every other month to talk about what's going on. And I use email a lot to communicate, you know, situations. I think it's their right to be informed. I think the skater, coach, parent triangle of success is extremely important for coaches to understand. And, you know, the parents have contact with that kid and can critically influence their thinking. So you need to have the parents on board with you for the game plan.
Mm-hmm. So you've sort of touched on my next question. It's basically, you've had a tremendous amount of success in your coaching career, and you know a lot of other coaches that have as well. What do you think are two or three of the main things that separate great coaches from the rest of the coaches?
Okay, I think a lot of great coaches, they have an ability to see the big picture and to understand the process of developing a great skater. And they're always very creative. I've been sometimes in just so much awe of somebody like a Frank Carroll, the way that he can continually find a way to get something to make it happen. They're always very confident in their abilities, and they are very determined and hardworking. I don't know that I've ever been around a lazy, successful coach that just, you know, that's kind of the oxymoron. I think that some coaches can be more efficient than others. Like, some coaches are borderline workaholic. I don't think you have to be that. I think you can find a balance in your life. I'm married. I've been married for 30 years. I have a 23-year-old daughter who's a third-grade school teacher. And the same year that I had my daughter, Kelly, she was born, was the same year I started teaching Michael Weiss. So it was a very precarious balance, I will admit that, to raising my own child and raising an elite skater. And so good coaches have to have perspective and understand that what we do, this is a life empowering kind of endeavor, but it is not a life and death endeavor. And we have to have that perspective. And I think the other overriding quality of a great coach is that they are passionate about their work. And I would hope that my students understand how much I love the work that I've done, how much I've enjoyed the time that I've had with these kids, and how special I think this is. Because we get to do something that we've enjoyed when we were children, and now we're adults and we still get to do it, and we get paid for it. I mean, what would be better than that? So that's something that great coaches still bring a passion and a joy into the building with them. And, you know, I can be honest with you, Trevor, I'm probably not the most organized. I'm not a paperwork person. I carry a lot of information around in my head. I finally started committing things to writing after Nick Perna, who is one of my colleagues, said, you know what, you better write this down in case you get hit by a car. I went, thanks, Nick. So, you know, and again, keeping it all in perspective and having a sense of humor, that's really important for a good
right.
coach.
So maybe one of the things that you left out, and I don't know, maybe I'd just like you to comment on it, is it seems to me that one of the things that elite coaches have that's special is they have sort of, I think you included in the idea that you see the big picture, but you really see the details. It seems like elite coaches have an extra special power of observation. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think, yes. It's the big picture, and then it's the ability to dig in to create the big picture. I use painting sometimes as an analogy with my skaters. You know, if you have this beautiful work of art and there's this little blotch in the middle of it, you know, you've got to make every aspect of that canvas the way you want it. And so I recently started taking painting lessons. Again, to give you perspective.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, you're creating a masterpiece, and every detail of that painting is important. When you know, you're up close, you see one thing, and then when you walk back and you step back away from it, you see something different. You know, you change the lighting and you see something different. And it's very important also that you understand what you want the audience to see when you're creating a masterpiece. Like, do you want to do a Van Gogh this time, or do you want to do a Matisse? Do you want to do a Renoir, or how about who's a Picasso? I mean, I'm not so much a Picasso person because I'm a classically trained dancer, so I'm more traditional in my eye. But, you know, I think it's very important for a good coach to have an artistic you don't have to be a trained artist, but you have to have an eye for it. an eye for beauty. I had the opportunity to work with Tatiana Tarasova, who is just so intriguing and such a genius, and I learned so much from her. And she would go over the same thing 1,000 times sometimes, and it was really, you know, confirming to me that this is why she's been so successful. So, yeah, no detail goes unnoticed. One of my really close friends, Pasquale Camerlengo, who is now teaching in Detroit, but he choreographed Tommy's long program and Parker's long program this year, too. He always tells the kids, it's the details that make the difference. And that's something that they understand, you know, I think thanks to him, that, you know, every head placement, hand position, you know, in technical being, that's one of the things, you know, kids that are sort of sloppy in their technique, it catches up with them under pressure. So, you know, the details make the biggest difference.
Yeah. Kind of along these lines, do you have any specific advice for young coaches or coaches that are just starting out?
I think it's really good for them to work with a mentor and to, you know, get educated, get as much information as they can. They have to be careful that, you know, sometimes too much information can be confusing, but that's where you have to be open-minded and weed through what works best for your coaching style. Read books. I read books that have nothing to do with ice skating, but that have to do with coaching. And, you know, read books that are life empowering. I think that's important. And I think it's also important to have a philosophy of teaching responsibility and respect for, to the skater is very important, because not every kid that you're going to work with is going to become an elite skater. So teaching life lessons is just as important. And that's where I want to be a good role model for young coaches. I hope I've been a good role model. And I want coaches to be good role models for their skaters. You know, if you want your kids to be on time, then you should be on time. If you want them to prepare themselves properly, then you need to prepare yourself properly. I have a philosophy with Grassroots to Champions that we teach technique through technology and then reinforce it with training. And, you know, technique is the safest and most efficient method of performing a skill. Technology are all the tools that the company uses to make learning a little bit more efficient and more fun. And the training is that, you know, muscle memory development. And I would like coaches to have that philosophy, because I think a lot of them sometimes, you know, I definitely just started off teaching. And, hey, this is great. I never thought I'd make that much money. When I first started teaching, I got $7 a half an hour. I thought that was wild. Great money. And
probably was for a college student, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was either that or flipping burgers at McDonald's. So I think some young coaches don't understand the power that they have in dealing with their students, and they need to always be respectful of that and take that opportunity seriously and give good information. If you're not sure of something, go find out. There's so much good stuff now, you know, on the websites and online. Grassroots to Champions is going to start having online coaches mentoring. And any coach that would like to send me an email with a question, they are, you know, they are more than welcome to do that. And the other thing that's tough for a young coach is having authority, because a lot of times they are actually younger than the parents of the children that they're teaching, which was definitely my case. I was 17 when I started teaching, and, you know, if the kids were 10, that certainly meant that the parents were older. And to have a basis for authority, I think a young coach has to be able to back it up with statistics and data, which is available now.
Sure.
And I think, you know, parents typically are, number one, interested in their child's success and well-being, and they will listen when things are presented in a black and white manner, you know, your child's this, this, and this. So we have a very good fitness trainer. The company is called Functional Revolution. His name is Matt Davis, and he will do a strength test in front of the parents to let the parents see these are the areas that your skater needs developing. And it's unrealistic for the skater to be attempting certain skills until these areas get stronger. So I think young coaches that are a little bit perhaps intimidated, maybe worried about protecting their clients, their livelihood. The best thing you can do, actually, is to, you know, get confirmation from other coaches that, yes, this is what Susie's weaknesses are and this is how you're going to correct them. I think that it is difficult when you're an aspiring young coach sometimes to approach another coach and say, I need help. But I feel like that is the best way. And in this day and age, I think it's a lot more accepted than it was when I first started coaching, especially when a skater gets stuck. You know, every skater has plateaus. And, you know, to get a fresh outlook on what's going on and to just get a different opinion sometimes, I think it's good. I'm constantly taking my kids to work with other coaches. Just recently, I loaded them all up in the car. We drove up to Pennsylvania, and I had Priscilla Hill work with my kids. And it was fun for everybody. She enjoyed it. I learned from her. She learned from me. And but, you know, I realized we're two experienced coaches, so that perspective may be intimidating for a younger coach.
Sure.
But if I were a parent, I would want to know that the person that my child is working with is giving every opportunity to my child. I think that would be something I'd like to know.
Sure. Now, you mentioned when skaters get stuck on a plateau, and you mentioned, you know, possibly going and working with other coaches. What are some other things that you've done in your coaching career to help get over those plateaus?
Well, it depends on what the plateau is. Sometimes it's performance anxiety, in which case you can, you know, have them work with a sports psychologist, get them out of the rink and have them work in a performing atmosphere, like I put some of the kids on stage, you know, doing dance versus or doing some acting. There was a time when Michael was a little self-conscious. I dressed him up as Frankenstein, and so he had his alter ego. So sure. You have to realize what is the plateau we're dealing with sometimes. Sometimes it's not about that jump. It's about their self-confidence about their skating. And, you know, the jumps will happen when they're confident. I think, you know, as we all know, sports are 90% mental. So if they need some sports psychology help, Caroline Silby is on my staff. She's an amazing person. So insightful. It's helped me so much sometimes understand the language that the coach is using can directly affect the skater's thought process.
Can you give an example?
Well, you know, that old don't think of a pink elephant. Tell them what you want them to do, not what you don't want them to do. That's very good. That's very simple. Making sure that they have consistency in the manner in which they prepare themselves is critical. And also taking into consideration, you know, teenage hormones. Not every day is going to be the best day, and learning to cope with that as a coach and be aware that, you know, teenagers go up and down and their moods change sometimes in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
And not to get too worked up over it unless it's a prolonged situation. I think really understanding what is the plateau? In other words, if a skater doesn't jump high enough, I mean, they want to do the double axel, but they're only jumping 0.3. Well, it's probably not going to happen. Airtime-wise, we determine.
Now you're saying 0.3 seconds, right?
Yes. You need about a half a second to do a clean double axel, most skaters. And they usually have to be little skaters that are quick twitch and can really rotate fast. So if they need to learn to jump higher, then you get them into the off-ice room and you work on that. And it takes time to develop it. Just because you signed up for your 6 weeks Pilates class does not automatically mean that you're strong. And that's what a lot of parents are sometimes unwilling to invest in, that aspect of the skater's training. And I want coaches to know that I think 50% of their athlete's time should be in physical development. Because you can't get a skater to fly unless they're physically able to.
Sure.
So I think that's really important. And to get the parents to understand that, that's why the Grassroots to Champion seminar program always has an off-ice component to it. And we spend a lot of time telling the kids that in order for them to be good ice skaters, they need to be good athletes. I have a parents chat at the end of the day, you know, and I explain to the parents again, If you want your kids to be successful skaters, they must develop the athleticism. Because, you know, a lot of parents don't understand, why can't she do this?
Sure. Well, what are some things that, for example, I know probably a lot of coaches that are listening to this probably feel that, you know, they have a skater that is technically ready to start working on double axel, but probably just can't jump high enough. What are some of the things they can do off-ice to help their skaters?
Well, we use an off-ice harness. It's the ProMotion Advantage, which I love because the original harness was, you know, just basically you were pulling that kid up and holding him up, which for a female coach was difficult. But now the new model offsets the person that's in the harness's weight to down to a third of their weight. So I can one-hand anybody and hold them up in the air and correct air position. So we do that to work on just axis and rotation. And then we use a jumping pole, the handheld ProMotion jumping pole, which I don't do it that much myself. I can do it with really small children, but, you know, we have four guys in Fairfax Ice Arena that can use a pole. And I think it's been a tremendous confidence builder for kids that are on the verge of landing a jump. Maybe they need a little bit of air, and it teaches them what does it feel like to actually land the jump. It speeds the process, and it's safe. You know, Nick can prevent a tragic fall from occurring. That it doesn't mean they're going to land the jump, and that's what sometimes we get kids that want to go in the harness because they think that the pole will just make them land things. You have to be close to landing it to be able to do it in the pole. But I like the pole. I mean, Michael learned to do his quads in there, and you have to have a coach who's willing to work that hard. And I've been around a lot of coaches that certainly would be capable of doing that kind of work, but, you know, they're not dedicated enough. So that's my hat's off to my men here, because they all use a jumping pole. And, you know, the other thing, we do use a couple of other toys to develop muscle memory. I made this thing called an ankle buzzer, which is a neoprene wrap that goes around the skate. And on the outside ankle of your landing foot is a little sound box so that when the skater hits their feet and makes ankle contact at the top of a jump, you hear an audible cue. And we have a variety of different sounds available. But for developing that sense of get your feet together to create, you know, the tightest rotation possible, and to teach kids at an early stage what does it feel like to spin that fast, we'll put them in the off-ice harness and we put the ankle buzzer on them. And just teach them what does it feel like to rotate and correct what I call a D position. And the ankle buzzer was my sanity invention because I got tired of telling kids your feet aren't together. Get your feet together. You're not making ankle contact. I mean, how many ways did I have to say it? And now all they have to do is they're wearing it. And when they hear the audible cue, they know that they hit the target correctly. And if they don't hear the sound, they know they were in the wrong position. So I find it very helpful because it's there's a lot of repetition involved in learning this skill, and some of that repetition can be considered boring. So this is immediate notification. You did it right, and I like that.
Yeah, that is that's very effective. So do you turn over the like the off-ice strengthening, the issues of, like, let's say, trying to get better leg strength or improving quick twitch muscle to have higher jumps, do you turn that over to other experts with your skaters, or do you stay involved in that training?
I absolutely turn it over. There are people that are much more knowledgeable than I am. In the beginning, when I first started teaching, I did it all because we didn't have this program and, you know, did the best we could. But now we have a very, very knowledgeable trainer, and we have a really good backup with another company called Body Dynamics. They do physical therapy and they teach Pilates, and you know, they also do assessments, because it's important for you as you're watching these kids grow before your eyes and you're looking at things going, that hip looks off, or, you know, why are they always standing in this manner? You know, I'm an ice skating teacher. I'm not a trained physical therapist, so it's definitely important to have other people that you work closely with. Now, Matt trains our kids here in our building. We're very lucky. We have a very small ballet studio that is more than adequate, and he uses these things called kettlebells, And it's really, I think, the way to train. You don't have to go to the gym and press weight. What I like about it is the parents, it's a, you know, it's a one-stop day for them because most of them are busy, and so they can bring the kids here to the rink. The kids can do their skating. They can do their off-ice training. Caroline will come here and work with the kids as well. So it, I think it's nice if they don't have to travel hither and yon, particularly in Washington, D.C., where the traffic can just be a problem.
Sure.
And I hear a lot of parents saying, gosh, I wish we could get an off-ice program started. And I said, well, you just have to start one. You know, there's a lot of people out there that would be more than happy to, you know, have an established business. Sometimes Matt's so busy, he has other clients besides the skaters, but he's pretty much in the rink all day. And he even has an adult class with some of the moms. They realized their kids were getting so much benefit from doing the off-ice work with him that they wanted to just get healthy, and I think that's a terrific message.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about the whole athletic side, and it sounds like your original, when you started out, you had more strength in the artistic and choreographic side. Would you like to see our sport become more athletic or more artistic, or are you happy with where it stands today?
First of all, I would like the true athleticism to be recognized. It is so much more demanding to learn to do a quadruple jump or even a triple jump than to do a level four spin. And the point difference is not adequate, in my opinion. You know, I can do a level four spin. I can't do a double jump anymore. So I think, you know, we have to be honest about this. I understand they wanted to perhaps de-emphasize the jumping. They thought they would get better artistic performances if they balance it out a little bit more. But what's happening now is the kids are so busy trying to fill in all the spaces of the program that I think we've lost something. So to keep the artistry developing, I actually would like to see them take out a spin from, let's say, a senior man's long program, limit the number of times we see the same position over and over again in a spin, and also take out one of the step sequences so that they have more time to develop a storyline or a character in their performances. I mean, I saw a lot of programs where I could put on any piece of music and you would have never known the difference. The kids aren't skating to music anymore, I think, because they're trying to hold their spiral. You can actually see the girls counting 1, 2, 3. I mean, that's not good. I don't think that there's anything wrong with the new judging system. In basic theory, you know, somebody lands a jump, it should be worth this much. Somebody does a spin, it should be worth that much. That part's okay. The reason why we had to go to the new judging system, because there was a scandal and we needed to quantify our sport better. The problem is that the people that were involved in the scandal, the federations that were influencing their officials to judge in a certain way, are still appointing people. So, you know, I think that the ISU could have non-federation appointed officials, and they would just be appointed based on credibility, and they would be held accountable, and they would be professionals. Wouldn't matter if they were all from Greece, then they're all from Greece, and those would be our officials. And then you would have less nationalism. And, you know, I think the sport has to have transparency in the judging. You know, you can't have this anonymous. I just don't think that that's working.
Sure.
I don't see that as a responsible, respectable method. I mean, when I was at the Winter Coaches Summit after the 2002 Olympic Games, a lot of the other coaches in their sports that were timed sports, and, you know, they were kind of poking fun at me because, you know, they said figure skating, gosh, it's like a beauty contest. And, you know, they really said that skating has to become a more fair method of judging. And that was the perspective of the other coaches involved in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
If I were a parent and I was looking at sport where I thought a child would be able to grow and develop and learn a lot of life skills, I would pick figure skating. If I was trying to pick one that I thought would always have a fair and reasonably, you know, correct outcome, I'm not so sure if the figure skating would be it, you know, honestly. And I'm the biggest proponent of the sport. My husband's family owns and operates Fairfax Arena. Mm-hmm. But skating the way it's going right now, I don't know that the general public gets it either, because there are so many rules. I kind of use it like, sort of like we've been given a recipe for success. And in order for you to have a chance to get the most prize points for the walnut brownie recipe, you have to do it exactly the way we told you. And if you want to, you know, try something different, you're not going to get any points for that.
Definitely limits the creativity.
Yes.
Many coaches have key phrases that they say to their students that remind the student to do something or that inspires the student. Do you have some of those phrases?
Oh, gosh. One of my favorite ones, especially for an elite skater that's, you know, really been in the sport for a while, I always ask them, how do you want to be remembered when you are done with your sport? Do you want people to remember that performance or that particular year, or maybe that, you know, Michelle, that, you know, long stretch where she was just so successful? I think that's very important when you've been with a skater for a long time. Ask them how do they want their career to be remembered, and how do you personally want to remember your skating? And another one that I think is important for coaches to remember, that success feels the same to everyone, whether it's this little kid that learned their first axel or the kid that just, you know, made an Olympic team. It feels the same, that moment of euphoria where it doesn't get any better than that. So we have to remember that one. And then this is a recent one that I've been using. Success is maximum utilization of your abilities. Because I have seen a lot of kids that were not probably meant to go as far as they did, but they, you know, maxed out what they were capable of doing. And a lot of skaters that we see that have ability sometimes don't reach the potential because they, you know, they think they're good enough. So to me, unless you've had maximum utilization of abilities, you haven't been 100% successful. We have a funny thing in the coach's room with some of the kids we teach here at Fairfax, where we know the kids' limitations, but we always say, we are going to make you better than you want to be. And I think that's an important, you know, mindset for coaches. Just never give up on a kid. I mean, when Michael was little, he cheated every jump. He could hardly jump. He was last in every competition he did for the longest time. But he loved to compete. And, you know, I recognize that in them. It's important for a young coach to recognize what motivates their skater, like what brings them in the building.
So a lot of coaches are curious. What do you tell your elite skaters when they're about to take the ice at a major competition?
Gosh, everyone's different. With a skater that tends to be very anxious and nervous and, you know, terrified, you know, that kind of a skater, I usually tell them, hey, go have fun. This is what you've been working for, and just enjoy the moment. Other skaters that sometimes don't focus very well, I'll give them an opportunity, like, okay, you know, do this and this, and your reward is this. So it gives them a specific mission to perform. You have to really know what is it, again, that motivates that kid. A lot of times with the older, more experienced skater that has a lot at stake, you just remind them that all these years of working and everything you've done is for this chance to go out and show people, show them who you are. I don't have a specific pearl of wisdom that is my trademark statement, because every person is different. And girls are totally different than boys.
And that makes sense. But I think some coaches maybe suspect that you have some magic words that you just tell everyone.
I mean, you want to tell the kid that they look good, and especially the girls, you want to tell them, oh, you look beautiful today, you know, and tell them that you believe in them and that you are here no matter what. And I think that was something that I always took great care to make sure that, you know, whether their performance was good or horrible, that the athlete knew that I would be there for them regardless. And, you know, That's hard sometimes, because you know, you're disappointed yourself. You're human, and you're hoping for a particular performance and it doesn't happen, but the kid feels way worse than you do. So, you know, we have to remember that one. And I, you know, I tell the parents a lot of times too. And sometimes kids go out there and you know it's not going to be good because they haven't prepared themselves. And, you have to bite your tongue because you kind of want to say, I told you so. But, you know, that's how they learn. So it can't be about us all the time. And I think a lot of coaches want it to be about us. We work hard and we want to show everyone how hard we've worked too. But if it was about us, then we'd still be out there doing it.
Well, being good at competing is really a lot of the mental side of skating. And what kind of mental training do you have your skaters do, and how much time do they devote to that?
I think it's really important that an older skater learns to monitor their thoughts. You know, younger skaters, they just go. They're like dogs. They don't even think about it. But an older skater, I had one recently confess to me right before he took the ice that, you know, he was going, I was talking to myself about the dumbest things that had nothing to do with what I was going to do. And he realized it and he put it off. But, yeah, I sometimes will stop and go, what were you just thinking? You know, and I have them journal. They do a lot of reflection after an event or after their day. This was what I was thinking going into my triple flip. This is what I was thinking, you know, at the end of the program. And sometimes I ask to see them, sometimes I don't, because if they're going to be very personal, then they don't want everyone to know what's going on in their head. But they need to be able to reflect upon it. I think monitoring their self-talk is very important, and teaching them how to use correct self-taught, even if in the beginning it's a little artificial. Maybe, you know, the skater is thinking, oh, I can't do this, but they have to learn to say to themselves, I can. I am doing it. I'm doing a good job. You know, you just got to say the right, use the right language. And the other thing that I think is very important, we do a lot of mock events where, you know, they warm up, they do their six-minute warm-up, we clear the ice, they do an exhibition or a run-through, I'll take them to a different rink, you know, put them in a different environment. Sometimes even here in my home rink, I'll just tell them, okay, today you're going to turn the program around and you have to do it the opposite direction of your normal training pattern, just to make it feel like it's something different. The other thing I like to do is I have the kids warm up and they come out on the ice, and we've taken all the elements that were in their program and written them down on a piece of paper and, you know, done a number of slips of paper and put them in a bowl. And they have to just pick out one of the slips and go perform that element. So it's, again, taking them a little bit out of their comfort zone, because some kids, I have to do my waltz jump first. I have to do my flip jump, you know. So I mix it up for them, and they don't know what's coming next. I think that's very important. Keeps them on their toes. Another game that we have at exhibition sometimes, the kids will perform their exhibition, and then when they get off the ice, they have to pick one element out of, you know, the bowl. It's on a slip of paper. And if that particular element was properly executed, they win a prize. And this keeps the skater fighting through a run-through, because they have no idea what that particular element is going to be. So maybe they missed the combo, but they did everything else correctly, and the element that they pick out of the bowl on that day is their spin combo. And so they get a prize and a reward for that, because it teaches them to continue to apply effort to the run-through. I have a million games, Trevor. Yeah, we'll have to talk about those. A lot of it is because I think training can become mundane and a little bit drudge, you know, a little bit of a drudgery.
A lot of coaches, it's becoming much more accepted and popular to work within a team of coaches. And I know that you work with a team of coaches at the Fairfax Ice Arena. How did you build your team?
Well, I think that the smartest coach surrounds himself with good talent that they trust. It's kind of like the president and his cabinet. And I think that you need a head coach. Whoever is in charge of Busy Sal Cow, you know, it doesn't have to be me. And I can be the assistant coach, just like on a football team. You know, you've got Joe Gibbs, and you've got the quarterback coach, you've got the kickoff coach, you've got the whatever. But you surround yourself with really good talent, and that talent cannot have ego. They have to be in it for the betterment of all. So we work in a cooperative environment versus a competitive environment, even though we're teaching competitiveness. But when it comes to our skaters, that's exactly what they are. They are our skaters. We are happy for all of them. And it also is a requirement that there's adequate business in the building. And I know a lot of rinks, the coaches are struggling to make a living, so they're fighting for their territory. But if they understood that the more kids that just are skating in general, it's going to increase their odds of having more clients. So we have a tremendous group lesson program here. And I think any good skating school has to have a good lesson group lesson program. If you don't, then you're constantly trying to siphon skaters off of other facilities, and that's just not the way to do it. I'd rather take a kid from, you know, ISI Freestyle 1 and develop them than keep looking elsewhere. So I think having enough clients in the building for the coaches to work cooperatively, and then having that understanding that we are all working together on behalf of the skaters in the building creates a good team. And we enjoy each other's company. I mean, we really have a good time. Hopefully someday you'll come and work with us and you'll see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, Audrey, we're out of time for today, but thank you so much for talking with us. I know that the coaches listening to this will really appreciate hearing your thoughts.
My pleasure, Trevor. That was terrific.
Audrey, is there a website or a phone number you could give the coaches in case they want to get more information about Grassroots to Champions?
Absolutely. Our website is www.grassrootstochampions, it's all one word, .com. And I also have another address for that. It's www.g2c.us. And my email is on that, and coaches should feel very free to send me an email with any kind of question or concern. You know, I have dedicated myself these last years to helping other coaches with their craft, and so I am here in service to them, and I welcome, you know, sharing ideas and information. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Wonderful. I just want to clarify the G2C.us. It's the letter G, the number 2, and the letter C.
Yes.
US. Okay,
yes.
Wonderful. All right, Audrey, thanks again, and good luck with your skaters this season. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Trevor.